Podcasting from Nashville, Tennessee, this is your New Constructs Weekly Market Update. Visit us at newconstructs.com or tweet us at New Constructs. Here's your host, investor, and market veteran, David Trainer.
So the recent market volatility has really got to be making investors wonder what's going on. Professionals are sort of doing the same thing. I mean, the markets head down over and over and then only to pop back up mysteriously after everyone thinks the doom has hit. And it's all about the Fed. If you haven't figured that out yet, the Fed is the one driving, really, the markets up again and again. Don't fight the Fed is a familiar term that ever since the late 90s I've been familiar with, because in the end of the day, the Fed has, more often than not, practically dictated market levels. And so what we're seeing during these declines and then reversals again and again is a market that's recognizing more and more the inevitability of the rising of interest rates. I wrote a blog post a couple of years ago, and many other economists have talked about how lower interest rates, or artificially low interest rates, does permanent long-term damage. Because effectively what you're doing is you're allowing people to allocate more capital to lower return activities that creates an opportunity cost for investments that would have been forced to engage in higher return activities. Put simply, if interest rates are 1%, there's going to be a lot of capital just earning 1%. If interest rates are 5%, there's going to be a lot less capital earning just 1%, because you can't make money doing that. It's not a break-even point like 1% is, if that's the overall sort of going interest rate. So when the Fed raises rates, it effectively raises the cost of capital for all businesses and forces them to earn higher returns on capital. And so when you keep rates low for a long time, well, then you are artificially holding down competitive rates of return. And really the takeaway, honestly, is that you're slowing growth for the economy. Let's just say you got 10 bucks as a simple example. And if you invest that 10 bucks at 1% a year, right, you're only making a penny. And if you invest that 10 bucks at 5%, well, then you're making 5 cents, right? And so at the end of year one, at 1%, you've got $10.01 to reinvest in the economy. And the end of, in the other example with 5%, you've got $10.05 to invest in the economy. And as you compound that over time, obviously the 5% economy is one that's generating a great deal more capital that can in turn be reinvested and drive growth, because you're earning higher returns on that capital. So returns on capital really is a central concept, not just to understanding individual corporate profitability, but understanding country or sovereign profitability. And one of the things that's made the United States one of the best economies and best places to live in the world is the fact that our companies earn the highest returns on invested capital. You know, the Apples, the Googles, the Microsofts that are 270, 70, 60% return on invested capital, it dwarfs what we see pretty much anywhere else in the world. Especially when it comes to size. You can have a few really small companies with high returns on capital, but those tend not to be sustainable. These large enterprises with high returns on capital are mostly a United States phenomenon. And in fact, our ability to create growth and high returns on capital has allowed us to export wealth and improvements in standard of living around the world. And the reason we've seen China rise from, next to nothing economically, and I used to call it a zero or a negative in the sort of global growth pie, to making actually a meaningful contribution, is simply because they decided to follow the Industrial Revolution footprint, the same Industrial Revolution footprint that the United States, that Europe, that Australia, that many, many other countries and regions of the world had successfully followed. And get this, China gets to do it without making all the mistakes we made when we just fumbled through it for the first time. Right? So of course they can drastically increase their productivity, because they're practically living, I don't want to say Stone Age, but they've not gone through the Industrial Revolution. And another thing to keep in mind is that, look, it's still a communist country. Now, they may have adopted some capitalist policies and processes, but those policies and processes are effectively following a playbook that someone else has written. So there's yet to be
determine whether or not they can actually innovate and do anything on their own outside of just copy what others have done. And at the end of the day, innovation is the key. Innovation is the key to high returns on capital. And it's the key because of a very important concept called the investment opportunity schedule. And really all that means is that there are very few high return activities. For example, if you know of a lemonade stand that's earning a 50% return on capital. So for every dollar that this family puts in their lemonade stand, they're earning $1.50. Well, how often do you think, for how long do you think that one lemonade stand is going to be the only one in business? And how long will it take for someone to come over and say, you know what, I'm willing to run my lemonade stand, I'm going to charge a lower price, but I'm still going to make a 40% return on capital, because that's still darn good. And then someone else comes along and says, well, I'm willing to make a 30% return on capital and offer the same product. So the point being that it is very difficult to maintain high returns on capital because everyone's going to come compete with you in that business and try to get a piece of that. And that's why it's important to innovate. You've got to be able to do something that no one else can do. So back to the market musings. The market's going down, down, down as it's really trying to settle itself around the reality that interest rates are going lower. The Fed comes in, or Fed statements are released that give the market some peace of mind that that's not going to happen for a long time. But effectively, all we're doing is putting off the inevitable. The famous Bill Gross, former PIMCO bond king, really sort of had a hard time around this time last year because he was predicting the end of the bull market, because he was really speaking to these realities. They can't continue to keep rates down for this long. And if they do, they're going to be doing untold damage to the economy. And you know, when you just think about the math and the simple concepts, as I laid out before, he's absolutely right. But you have to think then about the alternative, though, however. If we do raise rates, what kind of waste does that lay to the people who are not yet ready to compete at the higher level? What does it mean for unemployment? What does it mean for the underutilization of the economy? I'd say it could mean a lot, right? We might have a lot of people out there able to earn those high returns, but all those that are on the borderline or not able to earn the high returns are now put out of business. Now we've got a big unemployment, and we've got a big underutilization and potentially disinflation and deflation problems on our hands. So the Fed has decided to keep rates unsustainably lower for as long as it believes it's going to take for economic growth to catch up. So what does that mean? I think it really means, honestly, sort of a win-win scenario for equity markets. Basically, they're going to do whatever they need to do to keep the markets propped up until they know that they can pass the baton to a swiftly and strongly growing U.S. and hopefully world economy so that the growth will be there to sustain markets and prevent them from going into free fall just because rates are going up, because rates ought to be going up. So investors, what does this mean? Up and down in the market, all this Fed stuff, it's all a bunch of noise. How do you make money? How do you survive best? How do you protect your portfolio? You got to understand what the market cares about at its core. Not the noise, but the real signal. And at the end of the day, it's about cash flows. Owning businesses with real, strong cash flows, growing cash flows, and with valuations that reflect relatively low expectations for future cash flows, that's what you got to be in if you're going to be in stocks for the long term. I'm not going to give you any short-term advice because you know what? I can't predict the day-to-day movements of the market, and I don't really want to pretend that I can. And I would warn you against people who say that they can. Because otherwise, unless they have a crystal ball into what the Fed's going to do or what the general psychology of the market's going to be, it's really difficult to do that on a regular basis. And I think it's important to distinguish between a little bit of luck and a little bit of skill. Too often people mistake skill for luck when looking at people's performance in the markets. There's a lot of luck involved and not as much skill as you think. So takeaway again, try not to get too caught up in the noise. The up and down of the market, to be honest, Wall Street loves this because it scares investors and they sell, and it goes up and it gets investors excited and they buy. And guess what? Wall Street makes money coming and going on you. The best thing for you to do is to identify those companies, those great companies with great cash flows and relatively cheap valuations. And that's what we specialize in providing. That's what we focus on helping investors identify by going through the fine print and doing all the work required to truly understand what the profitability of a business is and what its relative valuation is.